My sisters and brothers, may the Lord give you peace. Good morning. So as you saw from the very beginning of Mass today, someday a young woman is going to take my place. We're not allowed to say that out loud, but you heard it and saw it here first. All right, so we're about 10 days into this journey, and how are we doing? Are we awake? Are we alive? Yes? And the journey leads us where? Thank you, Pentecost. Very good. But in and through Pentecost, because it is a journey that engages us in recognizing and embodying the very gift of God's Spirit. That God has given us God's Spirit, God has given God's life to us, God is the one who nurtures and nourishes us. It is the very energy and dynamism of God that gathers us together, yes? That's not too much energy. So, but it is this dynamism of God. So what we need to keep in mind as we listen to the readings is we want to be able to focus very much on the gift of God's Spirit, because in the gift of God's Spirit, we are sharers in God. God's very life breath is shared with us. So we are in this radical communion with the experience of God. With that in mind, let's go to the first reading that we hear that comes from the book of Genesis. And it's early in Genesis because Abram is still Abram. He's not yet Abraham, yes? So what we have is in this wonderful image, and by the way, I just have to say, I'm not always fond of the more recent translations. However, this translation is helpful because we have the smoking fire pot and the flaming torch, yes? Years ago, in the previous translation, it was the smoking pot and the flaming brazier, which one lector had as he was smoking pot and there was a flaming brazier. So yes, this translation is much better for us, yes? Nonetheless, the image opens with God promising Abram the land. God is going to give a gift to Abram and to his descendants. And we have to sort of focus on how it is that we understand gift, because all too often for us, if I give you a gift, you have to give me a better gift, yes? Is that the way we do it? That's not a gift, that's a transaction. God's gift has no strings attached. God's gift of the land is God's gift. Abram's question then is, how am I to know this? And the response is, in your gift, you will know this. You will understand this when you yourself also offer a gift. And so Abram then offers these animals in sacrifice, yes? But what's most interesting about this for me is that Abram then is enveloped in this darkness, this incredible darkness out of which he cannot see. This is the experience of the awesomeness of God. And there are not a lot of ways that we can talk about this. But to be so enveloped in the experience of God that one loses one's bearings. It's like being caught in a whiteout or in a great fog where you really don't know where you are at the moment. And so it is being caught up in the awesomeness of God. So how will I know that you are going to do this? You will know this because I will share myself with you such that you might be caught up in the incredible goodness, graciousness, and awesomeness that is God. So Abram is caught up in this, and it becomes dark, and he realizes that the giver of this gift is faithful. And so the land then is given. But as we recognize, it is not enough for God to give the land. ultimately, what does God give? God. Ultimately, God gives God. The land is not enough. The radical gift that is given is God. Thus, we have this remembering of the Pentecost experience wherein we breathe in the very being of God. We go then from Genesis and this awesomeness of God that envelops Abram to the reading of Paul's letter to the Philippians. And this is a wonderful image that Paul offers to us. And we know that the controversy that Paul is involved in at this time is a controversy with those who would say, yes, but to the experience of God. Yes, it's all wonderful to be caught up in this, but if you really want to belong, you have to follow the law. So Paul will say, be imitators of me, because Paul, a Jew, a Pharisee, has moved beyond that and into the depth of God's Spirit that frees him from the minutiae of the law. And so he will say, be careful from those for whom their God is their belly and their glory is in their shame. He is not talking about gluttony. He's talking about the dietary laws. Don't get caught up in those who are so preoccupied with the dietary laws that they have lost sight of the very Spirit of God. Their glory is in their shame, circumcision. Don't make yourself so crazy that this is the mark of the covenant, when indeed the mark of the covenant is the cross and the way in which you have been called to live your life in conformity to the very love that you have known and the gift of God's Spirit. Paul is challenging the Philippian community, saying to them, you have to grow up and move beyond conformity to the law and live in conformity to the Spirit of God that you have been given. And so once again, it is entering into the darkness, because when we have the rules, when we have the map, we can say, oh yes, we know exactly where we stand at this moment. When we are living in conformity with the Spirit, we are guided by love, compassion, courage, wisdom. And there are no rules that govern these virtues. True? If you've ever been in love, you know you've lost everything, yes? So it is that whole sense of entering into this incredible experience and letting go of everything that gets in the way of being attentive to the gift that God has given, and the gift that God has given is God. So then we move to the gospel text, and we hear the gospel according to Luke. Now, we need to play with this a little bit, because there are three images we need to hold on to here. A few weeks ago, shortly after the New Year, we heard the story of the baptism of the Lord in Luke's gospel. And in that story of the baptism of the Lord, Jesus goes into the water of baptism with John, correct? So, and other people have been in that water as well, yes? And you know what happens to you when you go into water after someone else has been there? You're going to take everything that's there, yes? It just seeps right into your being. So sinners, tax collectors, had been in the water before him. So he goes into the water and absorbs into himself the brokenness and fragility of the human condition, of what it is to be a human person. And comes out of the water, goes to pray, and then in Luke, in the middle of this prayer experience, the Spirit descends as in the form of a dove, and a voice is heard that says, "This is my beloved Son." So hold on to that image, and then we come to Luke last week, and we hear the story of the temptations, correct? And each of the temptations is preceded with the phrase, I knew you'd remember this, if you are Son of God, then, correct? So one, this is my Son, my beloved. The temptation then, if you are Son, Take care of yourself first. Turn these rocks into bread so that you can eat. Who cares about anyone else? If you are son, fall down and worship me, and I will give you everything. The golden calf. If you are son, defy death. But for each of them, we also know that his response is, indeed, this is what it means to be human. Human beings hunger, yes? Human beings are caught up in a world where we're pulled in lots of different directions, and yet we know our faithfulness is to this experience of God. Human beings, as much as we would like to defy death, are we going to win? It's not going to happen, is it? And so it is part of the reality of our life. It's a part of what it is to be who we are. Jesus accepts and assumes every facet of what it is to be a human person and does not play games with, if you are Son of God, then you should behave in a way that's different from what it is to be a human person. But to live in conformity and in honesty with your integrity for what it is to be who you are. And that brings us then to the gospel we hear today, and the gospel is the story of the Transfiguration. Peter, James, John go up to the mountain with Jesus, and once again, this is my son. This is my son from the water. This is my son from the desert. This is my son on the mountaintop. This is the one who lives in radical conformity to what it is to be a human person, who is faithful. Who is faithful to his identity, who is faithful to the relationship that he has with me. And so the interesting thing is, who are the other boys who show up? Elijah and Moses. And they're having a conversation, yes? And what are they talking about? I'm sure you remember. They were talking about the exodus he was to accomplish in Jerusalem. What happened in the Exodus event? They were set free. They were liberated, yes? From Egypt into the desert, into the promised land. The exodus he is about to accomplish in Jerusalem is to set people free once again from the bondage and the oppression of the religious institution that would demand of them conformity to a way of being that was contrary to who they were. It's a powerful exodus. And that is what we accomplish as we enter into the Easter mysteries, and through the Easter mysteries, onward to Pentecost. This is the liberation to be set free from everything that binds us from knowing and being one in communion with God. We come then into the text, and Peter, James, and John enter into the cloud, yes? And we know this image of the cloud, not unlike the darkness for Abram, not unlike the cloud that led Israel out for a pillar of fire by night and cloud by day, not unlike the cloud that filled the meeting tent when Moses went into the tent to engage in conversation with the Lord. This is the same space. And so the invitation then to enter into this cloud, into this great darkness, where all one can do is to be overwhelmed by the goodness, the graciousness that is God. To allow one's life to be reshaped and reformed simply because we have entered into the radical presence that is God. And perhaps we sort of look at this for ourselves and say, it has happened for me, or I wish it would happen for me. And perhaps at times we only know that it did in fact happen when we tell our story to someone else and they say, aha, in that moment, how graced and blessed you were. But it is entering into that space where nothing makes sense anymore. There are no directions. And yet, to be so overwhelmed and overcome by the graciousness, the goodness that is God. Finally, there is only one gift with no strings attached. It is God who gives God. And our invitation is always to enter into that space of communion such that we might be overwhelmed by the gracious gift that is God.